Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to It's Complicated, the podcast to help you untangle your relationship with your phone.
Well, we've all been pushed around.
I'm Tanya Gooden, and each week I'll be talking to my guests about how they manage the relationship with the tiny tyrant in their pocket. We'll be talking about how our phone habits affect our work, our lives, and our loves, and about what our relationship with our phone might just tell us about our relationship with ourselves.
Well, we've all been swept away.
If you want help and you want hope, you've come to the right place. This is It's Complicated.
Lost everything you tried to say, 'cause we've all been swept.
Today, I'm very happy to be talking to adventurer and author Al Humphreys. Al was one of National Geographic's Adventurers of the Year in 2012, and he's the author of 10 books about his adventures, including Microadventures, Local Discoveries for Great Escapes, and his latest book for children, Great Adventurers. Because he's an explorer and adventurer, I couldn't manage to get Al in the studio, so we're calling him at a location somewhere in the UK.
Hi, Tanya.
Hi, Al. Great to be chatting to you today.
You too. Nice to talk to you.
I'm imagining that you've just come from some wild swim somewhere, or you've just come down off a fell. Or is it something a bit more prosaic than that you're doing today?
It's a bit more prosaic than that. I'm book writing in my shed.
Oh, wow. So that's your latest book, is it? After your Great Adventurers?
Yep. Yeah, I'm writing another book for children, actually, about rowing across the Atlantic Ocean. I'm in that early stage of finding it agonisingly hard to do it and finding any excuse to procrastinate possible. So it's nice to talk to you.
So I am your excuse today.
Yes.
Actually, it's really interesting that you're writing for children again, because I wanted to kick off by talking about that, because the podcast is about exploring what our phone habits might be doing to our lifestyle or our work. And you are all about encouraging us to live adventurously and get outside. And there were a couple of bits of research that I came across from last year that I wanted to talk about. One was from the National Trust, and they commissioned a study that found that engagement with all of our rural spaces has dropped really drastically in just one generation. And then children now are spending half the time playing outside than their parents did. So apparently it's about 4 hours a week that children now spend playing outside, and that compares with over 8 hours for their parents. And another study also found, this was the UK government, found that 10% of everyone they surveyed hadn't been in a natural environment, such as a park, a forest or a beach, for at least a year. So what is happening? Why are we not getting outside? Do you think our screen habits might be to blame, and what can we do about it?
I think there's lots of reasons why we're getting outside less. The roaming area that children are allowed to roam, that drops generation after generation after generation dramatically. And I think the main reason for that is not phones, that's for everyone being terrified of letting their children do anything that's perceived to be dangerous. So I think this risk-averse culture is a huge problem. Mm. Also, as more people spend more of their time in jobs that require them to just be inside at desks, we start to lose that connection to the natural world, to the point where I think a lot of people don't even notice that they miss it, and therefore don't even consider the idea of spending their free time being in the outdoors, or that it's a necessity. So I think that adds to it as well. Also, you know, our country is getting, well, every country is getting ever more crowded and de-wilded, so there becomes less natural wild places, and therefore it gets to the point where if you want to go into nature, you have to start to make much more of a conscious effort to do so. It's not really on as many people's back doorsteps as it used to be. So I think all these factors contribute to us spending less time outdoors. And then, of course, there are more temptations and distractions of things to do these days than, say, in the kids' parents' generation. So I mean, when I was a kid, all the way back in the 80s, I remember Saturday mornings, there was a little bit of cartoons on in the morning, and that was the real highlight and excitement. And then most of the time, TV was a bit rubbish. So
I remember that as well. Saturday morning cartoons. Yeah.
Exactly. It was a treat and a joy and a really fun thing. And therefore, I was allowed to just veg in front of the TV and I loved it. But the rest of the time, TV was a bit boring. Therefore, we went outside. I have no doubt that if I'd had YouTube and a phone, I'd have wanted to spend a lot more time inside playing on it. So it's certainly a valid temptation for children. But I just think the availability of all these things, it means that it's just there's one more thing for the outdoors to compete against for our attention and efforts.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, actually, you just said about us, our jobs spending more times indoors, because another bit of research I found, and I was really shocked by this, we spend 93% of our life indoors. And I was, horrified. I mean, I kind of knew that it was low, the amount of time we were spending outside, but I didn't realise it was that bad.
The times that I really notice how much I feel that the indoors is my default setting, that I notice that actually when I'm outdoors for a significant period of time, say spending a month out on a trip without coming into a house, you start to get used to being under the stars. And it's only when I spend chunks of time outdoors that it sinks into me how much time I usually do spend indoors and how normal that feels, but also how sanitized and detached we are from the wild universe out there. There's something that I love about being out on adventures is the feeling of being literally out in the world, feeling the wind, feeling the rain, noticing temperature changes, being aware of the sunrise and the sunset and living your days by that more natural rhythm. All the things that I definitely don't do when I'm back in the real world, writing books and things.
Yeah, we're so on autopilot now, aren't we? I mean, you're right. I don't really notice the passing of the hours or seasons sometimes, unless they're really extreme. Why is it so important then for us to get outside? What do we get from it? Why should we be trying to do it more?
Well, it's our natural state as animals. And I think just being in touch with the daily rhythms of sunrise and sunset does a good resetting job for our circadian rhythms. You know, when scientists put volunteer students down in underground caves in total blackness for weeks on end, they all go, their body cycles go loopy without having that reset function. And I really don't think it's very hard to get this reconnection with the changing of the seasons in the natural world. And it can be as simple as one thing I did a couple of years ago was on the each equinox, so the spring day when the day and night's the same length, and then each solstice, the summer one, the long day, and then the winter one, the long night, I went and camped in exactly the same place in exactly the same wood on those four occasions in the year. And that's four nights camping is such an easy thing to do, but I found that it really placed my year in context. Each time you're essentially looking back on the 3 months since you were last in that wood, you think forward to the next 3 months. You get a chance to measure your own life, the ups and downs and the hopes and fears of it, but also you seeing nature change from the budding green and the bluebells in the spring to the autumn leaves to the bare branches of wintertime. And I found that such a simple but effective way of reconnecting with being in the world. And this year I'm doing a also very, very simple thing to help me just remember that there's a universe out there, which is I'm climbing the same tree at the start of every month for a year. So
fantastic.
Climbing a tree takes 10 minutes once a month. And anyone who says they don't have the time to do that definitely needs to find the time to go do that. And I love it. You know, January, my hands were cold, the branches were bare. And then over the year, it'll change. And I'm looking forward to that.
So when you do something like that, do you share that on social media? Are you kind of showing people, like for your solstice experience, do you take photographs of that? Do you try and kind of inspire people with what you're doing to get them to do more of it?
Well, yes, this is the weirdness, both of my life, but also the weirdness of the age we live in, is that I'm doing these things in part to have a very simple, offline, natural experience. But on the other hand, adventure and the outdoors and stuff is my job. I also love, for a hobby, photography and film and things like that. So I do often find myself trying to have a natural experience, like climbing a tree, but armed to the teeth with cameras and drones and
because you're
all this
recording
sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I can see there's a certain madness to that, but I also enjoy the sharing of these things that I do, and that's quite a big part of the work that I do. So yeah, whenever you see a video of me online looking natural and at peace and calm in the woods, you will know that behind there is a tripod that I've carefully set up and run around frantically to catch the calm, peaceful sunset.
So how do you get that balance then? Because you're doing it to experience it yourself and get the benefits for you, but also you're sharing it, and in all of your kind of social media life and promoting the adventurous lifestyle and inspiring us to get outside, how do you make sure you still get the benefit of the lifestyle that you're promoting?
Well, I certainly don't do it perfectly. For example, this morning, book writing at the difficult early stage of it is so easy to just fall to the temptations of email and Twitter and all sorts of online nonsense. So I'm as susceptible to all of that nightmare as anyone else. In terms of when I'm actually outdoors, though, it works really well for me because I love the outdoors and the stillness and the wildness, but I also really, really love photography, trying to take nice pictures. And I also love the excitement of trying to make a good film up against the racing of the sunset. So I really enjoy both aspects to those sides. I think if I found that I was only doing the filming or the social media stuff just because it was work and therefore it was a chore, I think that would be a problem. But I actually really enjoy both sides of it. And I just have to, at times, remind myself to chill out, calm down, and not just film myself enjoying the view, but actually enjoy the view. And I personally really enjoy the balance, but I can see that it's a little bit incongruous.
Yeah, I think it's tricky for all of us who work. I mean, well, we all do nowadays, don't we? We work kind of online and offline. And a lot of the people I'm speaking to are people who are kind of promoting either healthy lifestyles or a specific philosophy of life, but then also trying to encourage other people to do it online. And I think that is a really tricky balance to get.
It is. It's something I think about a lot in my own life, which is how I first came across you and what you do. And I'm very aware in my own life that I'm more productive with my writing and happier and think more deeply about life when I'm away from the internet. There's no doubt of that at all. So what I try and do in terms of my work stuff is do it in bursts. So all the social media type stuff and blogging and newsletters, I tend to schedule. So I put it on, I go online, I do a batch of these things that cover the next few days or weeks, and then turn it all off, go to a cafe that doesn't have a computer and get on with some book writing.
I know you mentioned when we first spoke, which is a year or so ago, I think, that you use blocking software as well on your laptop when you're writing your book. Do you still do that?
Oh, definitely, yeah. There's one, I used to have an iPhone, and that I used Freedom for that, for just blocking everything. Now on my computer, I use a thing called Self Control, which blocks all sorts of things. And then my new phone, which is an Android, I've got some similar thing that blocks all the sites that you choose. Because I think it's not in my own, my willpower is weak in life. And if I sit down thinking, right, I'm going to get on and write my book, and I'm not going to open the internet, it's still using up a small percentage of my brain saying, go on, use it, go on, use it. Whereas if I completely block it, ideally by throwing my phone in the bin, or less drastically by just blocking things so I can't possibly do it, it just frees up a little bit more bandwidth in my head and mental clarity to just get on with the things I'm doing. So yeah, I'm very much, I think acknowledging your own weakness is a good starting point to fixing it.
I'm really interested though that you say your willpower is weak, because on the face of it, that absolutely seems not true at all. I mean, your, you know, one of your most famous adventures was your 40,000 mile, 4-year journey around the world. You know, that something like that takes a lot of willpower. I think a lot of us beat ourselves up because we find the digital world so distracting. But, you know, as you know, it's designed to be like that. I'm not sure willpower is sufficient for any of us.
I suppose in many ways I do have strong willpower. I do these long expeditions, but also I think a demonstration of willpower is anyone who's self-employed and has to make a choice to do their work rather than watch Jeremy Kyle in the day knows about the willpower of daily work. And anyone who's written a book will know the agonies of a blank page and the demands for willpower. So I think, I guess I do have strong willpower. But on the other hand, all these things that I've mentioned are hard work, and it's much easier to look at little videos of kittens. So yes. I think it's the same with whatever your own eating vices might be. If you're a sucker for biscuits, the solution is just don't have biscuits in your house, and that solves the problem. So with me and the phone, it's just block it all and then get on with things.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and t-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
So I mentioned your big adventure, your 40,000 mile cycle around the world. That was 2005, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2001 until 2005.
So I was really interested because I was looking at that and thinking, of course, you didn't have smartphones then. So I was wondering how the digital world has affected your adventuring and exploring over the years. How do you think that big adventure would have been different if you'd had a smartphone and social media?
Well, there are big pros and cons. Now, I make my living now exclusively out of the adventure world, and I'm massively grateful to the internet at large for making that possible, for both helping me organise and plan expeditions, for keeping in touch with friends, family and an audience through websites when I'm away, and then now that I'm back through promoting yourself. You know, my job would be infinitely harder without the internet. So that's the good side.
So planning would have been easier for that expedition if you'd had all the resources you have now. That's one thing well, that would have been really improved.
It would have been easier, but it would also have been what, you know, that the notion of just instant planning. Because I would get my internet on that trip by going to internet cafes, if you remember them. I'd sit in an internet cafe and think, right, while I'm here, I need to work out how I'm going to get across Turkmenistan. And I'd do all that planning and sort it out. Whereas nowadays with the phone, I just bimble up to Turkmenistan and then start bimbling my way from one bit to the next. There's far less detailed planning now. I would just sort of bimble along a bit. However, you know, one of the things that I'm really conscious of very frequently is that I'm very, very grateful I cycled around the world before smartphones. I would leave some big city, and let's say Beijing, and I'd cycle right the way across China for a month or so, and then I'd pop out in Kazakhstan and I'd find an internet cafe, email my mum and dad, tell them I was still alive, write a blog post about everything that happened in the next month, and then cycle off to the next country. And I'm so grateful that my trip was done that way, compared to if I did the trip today, and the trips I do today, it's much more a case of thinking, right, every day I need to update something, every day I need to try and show off about myself on the internet. And I'm very grateful that it wasn't like that.
So it's going back to what we were talking about earlier about being really mindful and enjoying the experience, that you've possibly felt that you were able to focus on it a bit more.
Yeah, very much so. I had an interesting dilemma in the summer of 2016 when I busked across Spain for a month, despite being terrible at the violin.
And oh, yes, I remember reading about that, yes.
Yeah, well, I've just finished writing a book about that. And that was a very interesting dilemma for me, because one of the things I was really craving was a month in the wilderness away from the nonsense of the world. And so my initial thought was, I'm just not going to tell anyone about this trip. I'm not going to blog or tweet or anything. I'm just going to do it for myself. But then I started thinking, this is such a cool story and people would enjoy hearing it. I was also thinking, this is my job. This is the time when I need to tell people stuff. So I had a real wrangling. In the end, I came up with a compromise to myself, which was to delete everything from my smartphone, all the emails, all the music, all that sort of stuff, deleted it all. And I made a deal that I would update one story a day. So a Facebook, Twitter, Instagram photograph and my words and thoughts of the day. But I had a rule that I was not allowed to read any of the comments or reply to anything. So it was purely a smartphone as transmitter. And that felt like an acceptable compromise for me.
I was going to ask you something about maps, because I'm a huge fan of maps. And I wonder if, you know, that lovely tactile experience you have, and I love looking at old maps as well, particularly, whether we've lost some of that experience of the world with GPS. I'm also a massive fan of GPS. Mm-hmm. And whether you ever still use physical maps. Presumably for your first big adventure, you were using a lot of physical maps as you were navigating around the globe.
Yeah, cycling around the world was 100% paper maps. Now the shed that I'm sitting in, I'm completely surrounded by maps. I've got a world map on the roof. I've got Ordnance Survey maps pinned up all over the walls. So paper maps are very much a big part of my life and my adventure planning. I think you can, just having a big, wide, open map is so much better for your brain to make plans with. So I love paper maps. On the other hand, when I walked through Spain, that was the first trip I've done in many, many years of trips. The first trip, I didn't navigate by paper map. I used the ViewRanger app, which is a wonderful app that allowed me just to be off-road on hiking trails all the way through Spain. So I, you know, smartphone maps are absolutely wonderful. But, and there's, well, like all these things, there's advantages and disadvantages of both aspects.
It's interesting, though, that you're surrounded by maps where you are. I mean, I think there's something really inspiring about looking at a map and planning a journey in that way, that kind of builds the anticipation up a bit more, doesn't it, than just, you know, kind of looking at a little arrow on GPS.
Yeah, very much. Just looking around now without even moving my head, there's probably about 10 large maps pinned to my walls and ceiling. So, yeah, it's a big part of my dreaming and planning and mindset, I suppose.
So I know you do a lot of talks and motivational speaking about your adventures. And I wondered how you felt about how inspiring people in person differs to social media inspiration. Because obviously, what in your life, you're doing both. You know, you're talking about your adventures on social and you're showing people, look, this is what you could do. You know, instead of looking at a screensaver of a beautiful view, you could be out there enjoying it. And then you're also standing up in front of people and talking about it. So how do they differ?
Yeah, it's very interesting. There's three different ways that I try and share my story to the world. One is by writing books, which I think can reach people in a slow, quiet, but hopefully quite deep and significant way. If someone gets my book at the right time in their life, it might make a deep, rich connection. But that's the slow burn process. Then there's the social media / YouTube thing of putting up inspiring, interesting stuff and recording talks, you know, sort of TEDx type talks online, which are brilliant for scattering your message. Well, the original meaning of the word broadcast, of course, is a way of people sowing in fields, to spread your seed far and wide. Exactly. And with that, I have the wonderful benefits of random people in all sorts of random corners of the world hear what I'm talking about, and hopefully if it connects with them, that can make a difference. And then the third way that I do it is by giving talks in public to events and conferences and businesses and schools and groups like that, and I get paid for that. That's the majority of my income. So I don't want to do myself out of a business, but I do often go to these events thinking, why are you paying me to come here when you could just watch this talk on YouTube for free? And I suppose the answer for that is because there you get an actual real human connection. You're making a question and answer, and you can try and read the moods of the people that you're meeting and talking to and have a direct, personal, literally tangible impact on them. So I think there's advantages and disadvantages of all of them, but I don't think many people would argue that the world is a worse place for us having all the TED Talks on our phones.
Yeah, no, I mean, I completely agree. I think in terms of the opportunity to see, you know, to broadcast a message and to see a message from someone you might not be able to meet in person, it's amazing. And I've seen some incredible stuff online. But it was interesting, I took a group of children to see somebody speak recently, and they were really struck by how they had watched a lot of people on YouTube and saying, you know, it's different in person, isn't it? It's a different, you know, that they actually got a real buzz out of seeing somebody talk on a stage, which they hadn't appreciated would be better than watching them on screen.
It's like going to a live sporting event where the view is much worse than watching it on telly. But yeah, there's still that power of being in the vicinity of people doing their stuff.
So I was wondering about your relationship with social media and how you create boundaries between your business. You've talked about, you know, a lot of this is your work and your business, and this is how you make money. Do you consciously create boundaries between Al Humphreys the man and Al Humphreys the brand, the explorer? Do you kind of have little rules in your head about, you know, this is stuff I never share, this is stuff I always share? Where are you on the, you know, let it all hang out versus keep a bit of privacy approach?
No, I have very, very firm boundaries in that everything about me on the internet, from this conversation to what I put on Twitter, is very much Alistair Humphreys adventure brand guy. So I don't need to tell you about the junk TV I watch or the traumas of my life or anything like that. It's just purely I'm here to talk about adventure and all that comes with that. I do that for a few reasons. One is just the privacy of life. I don't want to share who I really am with a bunch of random strangers on the internet. This feels weird to me. But also it helps me personally separate my work hours from my leisure time. So actually I don't use social media as an individual at all. I don't look on Facebook and see what my school friends are up, and I don't post pictures of my kittens and budgerigars and things. It's very much separate. So I only use social media as a work thing. And the reason for that is because I, by and large, hate social media. It drives me mad. I often get tempted to delete my entire website, to delete all of my social media feeds.
<you? laughs>
and just become a carpenter. I really, really do.
What sort of things makes you feel like that then? What are the kind of crisis moments when you think, oh, I've just had enough of this?
Well, it's usually my website breaking, because my website has got 18 years of content on. It's got 2,000 blog posts on, and it quite often creaks, cracks, breaks, and ends up full of Viagra adverts. And that's annoying. And then just, well, we talked about it before, when I'm sitting up a tree watching the sunset, in the back of my mind nagging at me saying, hey, you'd better put this on Twitter, this will make you look more adventurous. That I find that slightly absurd and ridiculous, and I'd quite like to not have that in my life at times. And then I think of the times when I'm not online. Maybe I'm up in a bothy in the hills in Scotland for a few days, or I'm walking across Spain for a month without the internet, and I just feel happier without it. So it's very much a compromise thing in my life for work that I keep it all.
Have you ever had periods where you've been completely offline, you know, as opposed to the just the kind of keeping boundaries around work and home? Have you tried, you know, longer periods of time where you've not?
Yeah, there's some fairly drastic ways of doing it. For example, you can get in a rowing boat and row across the Atlantic Ocean
for 45
days. And then when you eventually, with a sense of dread, I usually wait a few days after the trip before finally opening the email inbox and seeing the deluge. I walked across the empty quarter desert for 7 weeks and there are no Facebook updates. And it's great. It really is great. And what I love actually about, people talk about the efficiency of batch answering emails, but I love the fact that if you don't open your email for 2 months, so much of what has been sent to you is no longer relevant.
Yes.
And you can just, delete 2 months of emails and realise that really your life's no worse, those people's life is no worse, and it's far, far simpler. So, yeah, it's quite tempting at times to just completely leave the world.
I have got 3 final questions that I've been asking everybody that I just want to put to you and see your thoughts on them. And the first one is, what's the one thing you'd like to say, or the one message you'd like to get across to people who are listening to this podcast about their phone and screen habits?
I think the one thing that I'd like to say is that anything I am going to say, you already know inside you. Anyone who's listening to this knows all of this somewhere inside them already, I think. It's just a case of taking action on it, taking action on the obvious but difficult things like turning off your phone for half an hour and going to climb a tree instead. We know this, we just need to actually do it.
Do it, yeah. And have you got a top tip that you haven't shared so far that works for you in terms of getting a better balance?
I think I've covered the main things, which are very much in terms of my work side of things, is to schedule stuff, whether I'm scheduling social media stuff, scheduling just trying to answer emails, not on a constant drip basis, and then to remove temptation either by one of these blocking apps or, best of all, going to a place where there's absolutely no cell reception at all. That's a great thing to do.
I don't know, can we ever find those places anymore now?
Yorkshire.
Yorkshire.
Most places I go in the world has full 4G, and then I go to my mum and dad's house in Yorkshire and you have to go and stand on the village green and hold your phone in a clever position to send a text message. So yeah, Britain's phones, we are so rubbish compared to most countries in the world. But I suppose in the context of this conversation, we should be saying that's a good thing.
Yes, yeah. I think we do need places where we can get away from it all.
And then doing things like you do, I do it on a drastic measure by going out to the ocean. You do it in a more pragmatic way of getting people and just physically removing their phones. But everyone knows all this stuff. We just need to leave our phones at home a little bit and be more present. But everyone knows this, but just doesn't do it.
I know, it's the little nudges. You've talked about micro adventures, and I suppose I think about micro digital detox, which is what are the small little steps that we can take every day just to make sure that we're not whiling our hours away, whiling our life away on screens.
Yes.
And the last one of my 3 questions is, what have you learned about yourself from your phone and tech habits over the years?
I've learnt about myself probably nothing good, but quite insightful. I've learnt that I'm a workaholic. I am a narcissist. I have very low willpower and am easily distracted, and that I'm a complete and utter sucker for silly videos like people falling off their bikes, crashing when skiing, cats falling out of trees. That sort of stuff can distract me from my quest to write the great novel of the 21st century.
So easily distracted.
Yes, just generally a pathetic human being.
There's got to be something positive in there. I think the stuff you share is really inspiring, Al, actually. So I'm going to add that there.
Okay, well, the positive side of the phone stuff is that social media stuff essentially means that I have a job. It has meant that I've met fascinating, interesting, inspiring people all around the world, and that the stuff I'm trying to do in my life, encourage people to live a little bit more adventurously, has reached a far vaster audience than if I was just doing talks in village halls. So it's been an absolute wonderful thing for my life. I just need to turn it off and go climb a tree every so often.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thank you so much for chatting with me. I've really, really enjoyed talking to you. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get up and climb a tree, but I think I'm definitely going to put the phone down and get outside after talking to you.
Good, thank you.
I'd really recommend following Al on Instagram and Twitter. He is Al_Humphreys on both. And also do subscribe to the Alistair Humphreys YouTube channel, which has some really beautiful and inspiring pieces of film about his adventures. And Al's latest book for children, Great Adventurers, is available on Amazon and at all good bookshops.
Well, we've all been pushed around.
Thank you for listening to this episode of It's Complicated. If you haven't already, please do subscribe, rate and review the podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts from. It helps other people find us and it means you get a helpful little notification when a new episode becomes available. For more about getting a healthy balance with tech, you can follow me, Tanya Goodin, or Time to Log Off on Instagram and Twitter. And both my books, Off and Stop Staring at Screens, are available on Amazon and at all good bookshops. Finally, for more information about this and other episodes in the podcast series, visit itstimetologoff.com. But in the meantime, from me and from Al, thanks for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.